It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, fourth day of August, 2022. August is here. Summer is waning. But this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza. That is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. And, if you do pop in, you will be greeted by early arrivers Theo and Stock and Larry and Squeaky and New Jersey Nick and Anatole. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator and blaster of brain, Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fry anything by trying to fold space and become man cave. Yeah, hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Every program here at The Horn, however, begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we have many, many thanks to send out. Profound thanks to our fourth day of the month subscribers. And that means thanks to Thomas, and thank you to Paul. Thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Thank you so much. Those are our partial sponsors for the fourth day of the month via PayPal. Thank you so very much. We'd be in a horrible bind without our subscribers. Why? What does the I'm sending. Is nobody with what? Yeah. Is the stream not going out? I don't know. Let me see what I get. I love this. Everything looks like I'm sending out a program, and then Brother Deacon Asa says trouble. Never a dull moment in the wonderful world of independent liberal broadcasting. And by the way, I'm assuming, I'm going to operate on the assumption that this program's going out. The fundraising goal is $842, because that's as far as we've gotten with fundraising for the month of August. Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge was unmet. It might still be available. I hope that it is. We've had a hard beginning to the month of August. I had a note from our buddy our buddy Zed, who pointed out a little fact from the... Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tamara says, I hear you. Bless your heart for letting me know. All better. Okay, thank you, Brother Deacon. Don't scare me like that. Zed sent me an internet. it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Sent me an internet a thread regarding. Thank you, Tom, in sunny San Rafael. Loud and clear in sunny San Rafael. That helps. It helps so much. Because it's not like I have any feedback, and we really don't want feed, not that kind at least. Oh, deconfuse yourself, girl. No, Zed sent me this tweet thread by Ben Collins, and it contained a little nugget of information. The Alex Jones texts and emails are finally revealing the financials behind InfoWars. In other words, what can paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage do for you if you're Alex Jones? It didn't do anybody for the people who bought paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage except make them maybe want to vomit. But if you're Alex Jones, it was good. Oh, it was very good. Some days in 2018, over at InfoWars, Alex Jones was knocking down $800,000 a day. Hear me now, but listen to me later. Alex Jones... talktainment about jellyfish monkey hybrids from the wet markets of Old Kowloon was good for $800,000 a day. Blathering about transgender frogs was, and y'all say I talk about it all the time. Blathering about transgender frogs was good for $800,000 a day. Well, what is it, Robin? Are you jealous? You're goddamn right I'm jealous. As Zed said to me, we're in the wrong racket when we have trouble scrounging up $300 a day. You're absolutely right, Zed. You are. And by the way, Zed has renewed his offer to double brand new subscribers, 5 new subscribers. If you subscribe in the month of August, your $10 a month subscription gets doubled to 20, courtesy of Zed. There are people out there who are desperately trying to keep this program on the air, and we're $842 in the hole. And you know, a matching challenge to in memory of a pair of dear people who love this program and love this community goes. But yeah, you're right, Zed. Because see, hate and bigotry and fear mongering are what the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, called a good dollar. A good dollar. That's a good dollar. And I'm not really railing about fundraising. It would be nice if we could pay the damn bills and not have shit shut off, but you know, whatever. Well, that's true too. Matt in San Francisco pointing out $800,000 a day, your audience isn't dumb enough to buy End Times bucket pudding. I know, that's so true. Bucket pudding. I still think that sounds just That phrase is just pornographic. I've always thought, hey, honey, how about some of that bucket pudding? Ew! Oh, God! I feel like things are crawling on me. But, well, I mean, it's just kind of, it's, no, I don't have it in me, Lee. How much for chocolate, paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage? You should be, Lee saying you should at least be selling meat in the mail. Well, I thought about that, but I thought better of it. But, well, bad things are going to, and I'm sorry, I mean, this isn't the Oral Roberts portion of the program, but bad shit is legitimately going to start happening if we don't do something about these godforsaken holes we keep digging. I'm here, I'm here flailing away, and we just need to, you know, $842, and tomorrow it'll be $1,142. Oh, by the way, program reminder, I will be subbing for Malloy around the Truth Seeker campfire tomorrow evening. I hope you'll join in there. I always enjoy a chance to talk to the Truth Seekers. I think I'll ask my dear pal and broadcast colleague Tara Devlin to join in. We can make an hour simply fly by. It just zooms. But Alex, the saga of Alex Jones. Thank you, Stockton Larry. 5x5 in Sin City. I appreciate it so very much. Yeah, I know. Sooner noted that Sparky is a blaster of brain than brain pops up to get blasted. That's a beautiful thing. So, thanks for being right there with a finger on the hair trigger of the brain blaster, Sparky. I do appreciate you. It only got worse yesterday for Alex Jones. Alex Jones. I mean, this is, you know, the OJ trial engendered a lot of conversation about the quality of the lawyering going on there. Where is it, Mr. Fong? And if the glove don't fit, you must acquit and that kind of stuff. But lawyers around the country are just sitting around chuckling into their into their $1,400 a bottle bourbon at just how bad his lawyers were. I mean, a partner at Gibson Dunn, which is apparently some silk stocking firm, an individual by the name of Theodore Boutros Jr., said, Alex Jones is not only a horrible person, he is the worst libel defendant and worst witness of all time. Oh, honey, you haven't seen, well, apparently Theodore Boutros Jr. isn't contemplating what it would be like to see Nitwit Nero in a similar setting. Then there's Tristan Snell. Tristan Snell is the lawyer who took down Trump University and knows a little bit about how Nitwit Nero is in, say, deposition and the like. Sure, Tristan said. Sure, Alex Jones probably has a malpractice claim against his lawyers for turning over all his phone data to opposing counsel. But first, he'll owe millions to the Sandy Hook families and then likely be indicted as part of the January 6th conspiracy if he doesn't flip first. Then there's Ron Filipkowski, who said, imagine being the lawyer who just absolutely screwed your client due to incompetence. That client may end up going to jail because you hung him out to dry, and that client is Alex Jones. Take separate cars. Hire security. Consider relocating to another country in a name change. Listen, lawyer for Alex Jones, you could all... It's like I tell people who are getting ready to go off to law school, hey, David, in San Diego, have you taken off for Oregon yet? I'm thinking of you all the time. But I just thought of you just this minute. I tell people who are getting ready to go off to law school, listen, there's still time to change your mind. You could live an upright, decent, and honest life. You could be a piano player in a whorehouse. Sorry. I'm playing.
Hello, that takes separate cars, fire security. Consider relocating to another country and a name change. Alex was having a bit of a conniption after yesterday's big reveal. Reporter Jan Wolf, she's the legal affairs correspondent for Reuters. She said, "You rarely see surprise moments like this in trials. It's like something out of a TV show. Incredible stuff." And then there's Ben Collins of NBC News, whom I quoted earlier. Seen a lot of Law and Order. Nice. Hey, that Law and Order, of course, originated on NBC. Way to work the plug in there, Ben. Seen a lot of Law and Order. Haven't seen a twist as good as Alex Jones' lawyers accidentally sent Sandy Hook parents' lawyers the entire contents of his phone and his long-hidden financials, but they waited 12 days to let him lie in my life. Just an absolutely wild day. And it was. And it continues to just... like Steve in New York said yesterday, I think he broke my schadenfreude. Yeah, I think you may have.
Of course, you know, I stopped talking about the Sandy Hook stuff after I stopped drinking for a while.
You know, all those years of me talking about the effects of rot gut tequila consumed through a swirly straw, and, well, here we are. So, yesterday, as the trial came to a conclusion, you know, we had the clip of Alex Jones's lawyer. Comparing Alex Jones to a Holocaust, a victim of the Holocaust who was put in the concentration camp. Yeah. All the entire Alex Jones trial taking place, of course, in Travis County, Texas. Austin, that is to say. The circuit judge there, or I'm sorry, district judge is what they have there. The Travis County district judge, Maya Guerra Gamble, overruled, because when Alex Jones's lawyer, I mean, chutzpah, spit on the ground, Alex Jones's lawyer actually had the nerve to ask for a mistrial after the Sandy Hook family's lawyer dropped the text bomb on Alex on the stand. Alex Jones's lawyer, remember this in case you're ever, you know, hurt or you need a lawyer or something. Don't call this guy. Fandino Reynal. Fandino?
Look what they've done to my Fandino.
Couldn't help it. Apologize. He asked for a mistrial, and well, let's just enjoy the audio, shall we?
Good morning.
Morning.
We filed an emergency motion for protection this morning. I want to outline a little bit of the facts behind that. A couple weeks before trial, a file transfer link was sent to the plaintiff's attorneys, specifically Mr. Bankston. That link linked up a lot of files that shouldn't have been connected to it.
Notice the passive voice. That link linked up a lot of files that shouldn't have been connected to it. You use the passive voice when the active voice would be a little too real. What that translates as in actual English is that link went to a file transfer that we fucked up and put online. We uploaded it. Yeah. Major props to Judge Gamble for not just giggling uncontrollably at the ongoing malpractice of Fandino Reynal.
linked up a lot of files that shouldn't have been connected to it. Mr. Bankston immediately recognized that the files contained therein were confidential, attorney-client privilege, and contained medical records of people, a whole variety of things that should not be.
Yet none of which you preserved by noting any kind of objection to the confidentiality of any of the said records. You just gave it to him. You didn't say, golly gee, this should be privileged and confidential. I mean, I've got friends who are lawyers that I email with, and they just email me from their account. And at the bottom, there's this huge lawyer disclaimer. The information herein contained is intended only for the recipient named at the beginning of this. Just CYA for an email saying, hey, how you doing? But not this noble pleader, not Fandino Reynal. No. No, not Chuckles. No.
He turned over. And
inherit the wind, this ain't. Scopes, this ain't. William Jennings Bryan, this ain't.
He pointed that out to me. And I responded to him, what he said. I take it this was sent in error. And I responded to him, and I said, it has been sent in error. Please disregard the link. I will work on preparing a new one. I believe, based on that communication, that that's what was going to occur. I mean, we have a situation here which is akin to me mistakenly giving him the key to a room, and, you know, he opens the door to the room, and instead of finding what he expected to find, he sees other doors. One door is marked confidential medical records. Another door is marked attorney-client privilege. Another door is marked attorney work product. Another door is marked confidential communications.
But you know what the first door the lawyer went through was marked? Attorney malpractice. That's what the name of the first door was. And the Sandy Hook family's lawyer, Mr. Bankston, went through it and said, well, this should be interesting. And it was. It was.
And he recognized that and told me, I don't think you meant to give me this key. And I said, please throw it away. And apparently, at some point thereafter,
please.
He said, you know what? I'd kind of really like to see what's behind those doors. And so he took that key and he went back in and he unlocked and went into each one of those doors. And that's why we're here seeking protection under the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure as well as the court's confidentiality order. We are very concerned about the records that have been disclosed, particularly the medical records. It's very, very concerning to us. And that's why we are asking for the relief that they return all the documents.
Oops. Sorry. You lose. Judge Gamble said, I don't think it's a mistrial based on this. This is a gift that just keeps on giving. Alex Jones, by the way, is 48 years old. And, well, the first 48 years were probably better than whatever remains to him. The case is apparently in the hands of the jury now. The 12-person jury in Austin, Texas. Closing arguments were Tuesday. They want $150 million from Jones, who can probably write the check. Kyle Farah is also a lawyer for the Sandy Hook parents, and Kyle Farah said, we're here to make sure Alex Jones and his company pays for the reckless lies that they told. A continuous year after year campaign of defamation and intentional infliction of emotional distress as Alex Jones profited off their pain. and made tens of millions of dollars from online traffic and sales of InfoWars-branded products. You know, shit may start getting turned off around here. Because I've nobody here has ever tried to get rich off this program. But you know what we've never done? We have never deliberately hurt anybody. We have never tried to make a buck off of the misery and the suffering of another individual. Most of right-wing hate radio cannot say that. They cannot say that. Farrah went on in his closing argument and said he spews hate, and that's what gets people riled up. Meanwhile, Fandino Ranall said, Alex ran with a story and he made a mistake. He trusted the wrong people and he ran with a story that ended up being false. So now everybody and their cousin related to Alex Jones is filing for bankruptcy. InfoWars declared bankruptcy last April. And then he had another shell company called Free Speech Systems. They filed for bankruptcy last week, trying to protect those $800,000 a day. And Alex, meanwhile, went on the air to, of course, begin setting up his setting up his appeal and his malpractice claim. I'm surprised that there hasn't been a little sidebar conference at the bench where Fandino Ranall said, Your Honor, I'd like to move for leave to withdraw as counsel in this case, please, because it's just bad, and getting worse. Let's see what we have here, because he's screeching and railing and hooting and grunting as only Alex Jones can about his lawyers.
Please remember, if you need to assert a Fifth Amendment, you can. I need to know that you can do that. But you testified.
You can invoke your Fifth Amendment. And, of course, my lawyer should have got up at that point and said, and I'm not attacking, it's just a fact, show us the deposition. The guy's deposed me, Banks has deposed me, at 3 years at four times. And I've deposed four times by Connecticut, but I never talked to him, so I'm defaulted. They've got all this stuff. And I did search one of my phones. And
one of.
Didn't have Sandy Hook stuff in it. And then they came back and said, well, they're saying you're hiding it. Do you have any old phones? Tore the office apart, and I just said, here, go search it and give it to the damn lawyers. Because I wasn't talking about Sandy Hook. I don't care about Sandy Hook. We don't cover it other than when they force us to, and it's just so...
Oh, he's been forced to.
That I sit there and give the damn lawyers all the text messages, and then they send it over to Connecticut. The Texas lawyers, before the new one I have, never even gave them the stuff I gave them. Or that's what they claim. And then I'm sitting there in the final witness in a trial where I've already been found guilty by the judge for not giving stuff over. And my lawyers give them the raw text messages of 6 months from 2019, early 2020. That's the reality. And then I see a text message from Paul Watson saying this story sounds like Sandy Hook bull. A story about COVID. How is that even pertinent? How is that lying about something?
Well, as it turns out, Alex, we have breaking news. The jury's back. This just landed. Scarlett Lewis, a plaintiff, and Neil Heslin, a plaintiff, asked for $150 million in compensatory damages. And the jury, I guess,
Alex
can call this a win because the jury coming back has given those two plaintiffs for their extreme emotional distress and the torture and torment that Alex Jones unleashed upon them in their grief from having their children chopped to pieces by automatic weapons fire, which he claimed would never happen, that those precious little children were crisis actors. The jury gave him, you know how I said a little bit ago that he was making $800,000 a day? The jury gave him, the jury gave these plaintiffs 5 days. Yeah. $4 million. That's all. That's not going to come anywhere near bankrupting Alex Jones. The fact that he was braying on his air again after, but that's a win of sorts, isn't it? But then again, it's only a partial ending. Heslin and Lewis sued Free Speech Systems, who declared bankruptcy last week. That's the parent company to InfoWars, which also, like I said, last April declared bankruptcy. And there are still other proceedings yet to be completed. And the CNN article notes, the decision to punish Jones in such terms also marks a seismic moment in American society where the lies and conspiracy theories have flourished in recent years. The jury's decision sends a clear message to those who propel lies into the public conversation, whether for political power or financial gain, that there can be consequences for such behavior. As the Sandy Hook family's lawyers argued before the jury, speech is free, but lies you have to pay for. And Plaintiff Lewis said Jesse was real. Jesse was her son. Jesse was real, she said, looking in his eyes, Alex Jones's eyes. I'm a real mom. Ms. Lewis went on to say to the jury, there's not been a sincere apology, but if there was ever, I liken it to being in a car accident and you run over someone and cause tremendous bodily damage and you look at that person lying on the ground and say, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm not accountable for any of the damage I just caused, but I'm sorry. That's how I see it, she said. It seems so incredible to me that we have to do this, that we have to implore you, not just implore you, punish you, to get you to stop lying. It is surreal what is going on here. And yet, there he was on the air, still lying. And this is part of a larger pastiche in the United States of America. Namely, that Ms. Lewis and Mr. Heslin weren't public figures. You know, public figure defamation cases are controlled largely by things like New York Times versus Sullivan and Falwell v. Hustler. And makes it very difficult to win such a case. But Ms. Lewis and Mr. Heslin were just ordinary citizens who never sought the limelight, never sought to be public figures. And it's a different story entirely. And it does feel like a little bit, I can poo-poo that $4 million. I really wanted them to write, I wanted the jury to write down a one and start writing zeros until their hands cramped. But this is rather important. This will, I have no doubt, probably find its way to the Supreme Court. And that's worrisome. because the Supreme Court, this gang of six, has been, and at the urging of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, who would like to make it law to prevent people from being able to call him Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. And it's a right-wing fetish object, okay? That we need to do something about the libel laws because people tell the truth about what right-wingers do. Because truth is an absolute defense. This might find its way, even though this is in state court, this might find its way to the Supreme Court of the United States. And, well, look for a soft place for your rights to free speech to land. They might very well overturn this paltry $4 million judgment. In 2000, I mean, $800,000 a day times what? $260 days? That's a lot of $800,000. And that's a lot of paleo chocolate chicken bone nutritional beverage, too. Yeah, Darlene is in agreement. Darlene in Connecticut says, that's a pathetic award, like that jury is pathetic and so fucking stupid. Bottom line, it's not a sufficient deterrent to Alex Jones or future POSs such as him. I know. Absolutely. Kim in New York asks, okay, I despise Alex Jones with the heat of 1,000 suns, as Mike Malloy would say, but I gotta ask, isn't his lawyer in danger of being sued by Jones for malpractice, or does it give Jones a case for appealing the verdict? Well, the judge overruled the motion for mistrial and the motion for a protective order relative to the data in the released information, Kim. And those things will be handled in a later appeal. And anything that the judge ruled on that the defendants don't like is always, as long as they preserve the objection at trial, They can cite that in an appeal. And of course there's a Texas Court of Civil Appeals, and then there's the Texas Supreme Court, and it's conceivable it could find its way to DC. It's a little more complicated than going through the federal system. But yeah, he's probably got a malpractice claim. Probably in the amount of $4 million. There's a possibility of appeal, and there's a possibility of a malpractice claim. I think a malpractice claim is better. But because you have to show that the trial court judge was plainly, clearly wrong, clearly in error. Suman says $4 million. This is nuts. That's not enough for a single solitary molecule of the lost lives. You're right, Suman. You're absolutely right. But you got to remember that Fondino Reynal told the jury that they should give the plaintiffs $1. $1. If they were going to find him, if they were going to find Alex Jones liable, they should give the plaintiffs $1. But a different group of Sandy Hook parents, like I said, there are other proceedings, have also sued Jones in the court system of Connecticut. And they got a default judgment against Jones. Trial was scheduled to begin in September. Jury selection, however, was suspended the same day it started earlier this week. And that was largely a function of the bankruptcy of free speech systems. Because the bankruptcy law of this country puts judgments on hold, And lawyers who represent some of the Sandy Hook parents have argued, and probably rightly, that
Alex Jones
drained free speech systems of assets in recent years in an effort to protect all those $800,000 a day from the reach of the aggrieved plaintiffs. How much? Well, according to Avi Moschenberg, talking to CNN this past Tuesday, the free speech system's bankruptcy filing indicated that between 2021 and 2022, $62 million had been withdrawn from the company. And Free Speech Systems is essentially self-bankrupted. Well, bankruptcy fraud is a crime in the United States. Yeah, this was the compensation, Roger reminds us, for the loss of the child, the children. Tomorrow comes the punitive judgment phase, where they deal with punishing, that's what punitive means, they deal with punishing Jones for his outrageous behavior. So hopefully they'll write down 146, comma, ought, 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 comma, ought, ought, ought. So that's a beginning to this thorn in the side Thursday. Alex's phone data, Matt in San Francisco, says, I really hope they can tie him to 45's inner circle and perhaps some higher-ups in the four or so military branches that have all miraculously lost all the data for the same three-day period. I'm sure there's nothing to worry about. I mean, what's the worst that could happen with all the military branches being compromised and led by Nazis? At least the uniforms will be nice. Well, for them. For me, I'm not really fond of striped pajamas. No, and we probably look terrible in print in pink triangles, Matt. Maybe we'll both take up smoking again, and I'll meet you under the Southwest Guard Tower. Matt continues and says, I don't know what angers and worries me more. The fact that Alex Jones has turned vile behavior into millions of dollars, or the fact that there are enough of my fellow citizens that listen to his garbage to send him all that money. I feel ill. I know. And look how it compares. I mean, this is a side-by-side comparison between left liberal broadcasting and right Nazi broadcasting. Which one is the better business model? Which one will appeal to people enough to make them reach into their pockets and spend? I think the answer is obvious. And, Matt, you say you don't know which angers or worries you more. There's more of the spenders than there are the recipients. But the recipients are getting oh so very wealthy. I mean, Alex Jones didn't even have my friends, the golden microphone of the Excellence in Broadcasting Network, brought to you by Premier Radio Networks. He didn't have that. Not to say to give him credit, but he built that steaming mountain of putrescence and garbage from the ground up. And somehow or another figured out a way, before his deplatforming, to brainworm into people's consciousness from sea to shining sea. I mean, it's not exactly a convincing data point, but again, every time I leave the Wiggling Pig, there's a stop sign, and boom, there it is, an InfoWars bumper sticker on a stop sign. It's been there for years. Billable Rick, Alex Jones's case, if the jury awarded compensatory damages of $4 million against Alex Jones, did they award punitive damages against him? Not yet. As a rule of thumb, an award of punitive damages, if allowed by Texas law, is generally upheld so long as it's not more than 10 times the amount of the compensatory damages. So, where I was thinking, the 146, not, Apparently, no. We're talking about 39,999,999.99. Which still feels like chicken feed. Really, and you must understand this is part of a larger universe of how punitive damages work. With the remember the Exxon Valdez? I know, so long ago. That case went on and on and on and on. And there was a punitive damages aspect to it. And the Exxon Valdez had a lot to do at the Supreme Court with making sure punitive damages weren't too terribly punitive. You know, you wouldn't want to punish the Exxon shareholders for something that the corporation deserved to be almost, well, driven out of business for. I mean, that wouldn't be good for America, right? That'd be horrible. But one interesting factor coming out of all of this is the fact that in years past, I mentioned the Pineapple Prince of Hell, Flush Flemball, dead. And for years and years and years, when he would say something horrible, like saying to an African-American caller, "My friend, call me back when you got the bone out of your nose." Or when he attacked an ordinary citizen by the name of Sandra Fluck for speaking up for countless millions of women who wanted contraception not to be punished for using contraception by their insurance companies. He referred to her as, remember, sorry, content warning, trigger warning, a slut. Sandra Fluck wants her slut medicine so she can slut around and be a slut. And when he got called out on it, "My friends," and any other time, "My friends, I'm just an entertainer. I'm a comedian. I make jokes behind the golden EIB microphone because I have talent on loan from God." Yeah? And he got away from it. He got away with it. And people like the Beckerhead learned to use the same defense. And people like Bernie Goldberg, who was specifically cited by a mass murderer. And Bill Falafel Boy O'Reilly, who was also cited specifically by a mass murderer. They all said, how could we possibly know that some crazy person would be listening to this program? Only a crazy person would go and do what they did. Yeah. And they skated. When in fact, each and every one of these people, whether it's Hannity or Limbaugh or the Beckerhead, any of these people, they are all, and I know it's a highfalutin term, but we're used to it now and we know what it means. Every one of them are stochastic terrorists. Plain and simple. Stochastic terrorism is putting information out there that you have that you expect, that you hope, will be used by some anonymous person to perform a terroristic act. Nitwit Nero is a stochastic terrorist. Bill Falafel Boy O'Reilly, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, until someone took him at his word and assassinated a man in his own church, having been driven into a homicidal frenzy by Bill Falafel Boy O'Reilly. Going back to Billable Rick adding a little bit more to the conversation, Free Speech Systems bankruptcy. Robin, it seems to me that the bankruptcy court needs to appoint a trustee in Free Speech Systems bankruptcy case to figure out what happened to the $64 million of funds transferred out of that entity in the past 12 months. Yeah, I agree. And hopefully at the end of that, there will be a referral to the relevant U.S. Attorney's Office. Thank you, Frank. Frank, thank you so much. Thanks for getting us started this evening and getting us off the schneid. We are down to 800 and 827 dollars to go to fill in the hole that we're in right now. Thank you so much, Frank. Darlene in Connecticut says, something seems up with that jury. We'll see what the punitive damages are tomorrow, as Roger notes. Wondering how many of the jurors were right-to-lifers and anti-abortion goons. So they feel a precious little fetus as a born child snuffed out by an AK is only worth $4 million? Actually, only two. Darlene, there were two children snuffed in this case. So $2 million apiece. It'll be interesting to see what the Connecticut courts do on the other cases. Sandy Hook is clearly close to home with me. Could those Texas jurors have too much distance, and that's what gave Alex Jones his first out? Well, he would. I'm sure he far prefers being sued on his home turf in Texas. Probably the relevant laws are more friendly to the likes of him. No, Lee, the InfoWars sticker on the stop sign at the Wiggling Pig, was it below the word stop as in stop InfoWars? No, it was above the stop. Billable adds, Robin, the problem with awards of large amounts of punitive damages is that the Supreme Court has limited punitive damages under the excessive fines clause of the U.S. Constitution. That's where the rule of 10 comes in. I know what their rationale is, but the problem in affixing that rule of 10, the rule of 10 is not in the Constitution, but the question is defining excessive. I see punitive damages as a means of accomplishing something that I've talked about here for years. We need a corporate death penalty. I mean, red states are all into a human death penalty. In red states, they like to kill people in prison, whether they're guilty of the crime or not. Alabama does it. God knows Texas does it. But no state has a corporate death penalty. If you can zero out a corporation, every last penny, then you can finally impose some degree of accountability. You know, the possibility of the death penalty has been, in human terms, has been proven time after time after time not to serve the deterrent function that proponents of the death penalty claim that it serves. I mean, it just doesn't. But when you're, I think conversely, when you're dealing with a, when you're dealing with a board of directors who have a fiduciary duty, yada yada yada, the idea of a corporate death penalty that includes personal responsibility for those board members, that might actually serve a deterrent function. And thank you, Lee in New York, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, points out it took almost 20 years with the Exxon Valdez. The headline, U.S. Supreme Court cuts Exxon Valdez penalty to $500 million. And of course, you know, Exxon. Exxon makes that somewhere between waking up and the first cup of coffee of the day. And you'll notice Exxon, you will have noticed Exxon remains a going concern. Which reminds me of something. I saw this earlier today, and it sickened me, to say the very least. The story comes out of Australia. A pair of Saudi sisters. Bear with me here. This ties in. A pair of Saudi sisters. Their names, Asra Abdullah Aleshi and Amal Abdullah Aleshi, young women, had sought asylum away from the barbaric, disgusting, noble, puissant, gracious, bone-sawing kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They sought asylum in Australia. Filed the right paperwork, everything. And, well, about a month ago, the young women were found dead in their beds in their apartment in Sydney. They fled Saudi Arabia for Australia in 2017. 23 and 24 years old, found on the 7th of June, dead in their beds in an area of New South Wales known as Canterbury. And when they were found on June 7th, they had been dead for over a month. They did not appear to have been injured from what remained. And the police have said, right, we don't really know what happened to him. And we're trying to find out. And so, what can be pieced together about these young women is that they led quiet lives, they didn't go out. But, in fact, when the story broke in the Sydney area generally, a witness came forward having seen the photographs. And told police, I know those girls. Speaking to the Guardian on condition of anonymity, a woman said they were keeping to themselves at a party, and it was a queer girls only party. And the woman said, I noticed them keeping to themselves in a corner, looking shy, and so I went over there and started talking to them. They mentioned that they were from Saudi Arabia, and they talked about what it's like to be queer there. They said women live in fear for their safety, and that they were grateful to be living in Australia where they could more freely express themselves. And they talked openly about women's rights, and including women having much greater independence in Australia than they did in the kingdom ruled by Mohammed bin Bonesaw. The woman continued and said, I asked about their lives in Saudi Arabia and whether they had returned home recently to visit family, but they seemed reluctant to go into detail and gave short answers. I got the impression that they very rarely go out and hadn't explored much of Sydney. What's terribly sad is they told me they were excited to be out at an event like this, and that they were ready to start exploring more Sydney. They should have been safe in Australia. The police were very keen to speak to me, as it appears the sisters lived a very reclusive lifestyle, especially recently, and so police don't know much about them. She went on to say that the New South Wales police told her they were certain that at least one of the sisters identified as queer. They did confirm to me that they knew one of the sisters was queer, but they weren't sure about the other. And this witness in particular said, we spoke about how unsafe it is for Saudi women to be openly gay and that that would put a target on their back. So I wanted to make sure that the police were aware that at least one of the sisters were openly exploring their queer sexuality. This information could help find out what has happened to them. The Guardian reached out to the New South Wales police, and a spokesperson said, as the investigation is ongoing, police continue to appeal for information in relation to the death of the two women. Media had reported previously that they were dead by suicide. Police confirmed that they have told the family back in Saudi Arabia. Their claim for asylum was active. It remains unknown as to what the nature of the asylum claim was. The Guardian's office in Australia talked to an advocacy group that has a history of working with Saudi asylum seekers. And they said it wasn't surprising they felt like they needed to flee that horrid place. A significant number of people in the Saudi asylum community here fled because of their sexual orientation and because of the persecution they suffered or knew they would suffer if they disclosed their sexual preference. Australia has granted asylum to about 75 Saudi women. They both had jobs. They worked in traffic control for a construction company. And when I read that story, bear with me, it's not as unrelated as you might think. When I read that story, my mind immediately flashed on people like Phil Mickelson.
What?
Yeah, Phil Mickelson, golfing great, legend of the links, who eagerly signed on with the LIV tournament. You might recall that Nitwit Nero hosted a LIV golf tournament, you know, propped up with Saudi cash at the Bedminster golf course that he owns in New Jersey. Very few people came out to see it, with at least one person heckling the golfers for participating. But as the saying goes, I think it's a saying, the best defense is a good offense. Several members of the LIV team, the LIV tour, the people who took the filthy, blood-soaked money from Mohammed bin Bonesaw to prop up the image of his homicidal regime. They sued the Professional Golfers Association because the PGA said, "Well, you want to play for a homicidal maniac? That's cool, but you can't play for the PGA." And they would. I mean, how? It's a phrase in modern parlance in a situation like this to look at a Phil Mickelson and say, buddy, read the room. Phil Mickelson has enough money to buy God. And the PGA Tour is not exactly a shabby affair. You know, you've got the U.S. Open, the Royal and Ancient, the British Open, you've got the Masters, you've got the PGA Championship. Mickelson has won several of those. He's got endorsement deals that far outstrip anything that he makes actually with a golf club in his hand. But somehow he could not resist the offer of that sweet, 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 blood-soaked money from Mohammed bin Bonesaw. And he loved his country so little that he would take money from a man who ordered the murder of someone who was on the way to trying to become an American citizen. I mean, come on, it was nasty. It was nasty when Charles Lindbergh went to Nazi Germany and palled around with Adolf Hitler and came back talking about, you know, they're really doing some good stuff over there. Trains run on time, you know. And basically that's what we have in Phil Mickelson, minus the aeronautical genius of a Charles Lindbergh. Because you got to give it to the Saudis. They run a very ordered society. Granted, the women have to walk around wrapped head to toe in the blazing Saudi sun in black. And they can't go out in public unless they're accompanied by a male relative. It is a barbaric society, to say the very least, but it is orderly. Of course, every now and then, as is the case with any fascist dictatorship, somebody's going to get their head lopped off. But hey, they're our partners in peace. Right? Sure. So fuck you, Phil Mickelson. You know, with a rusty, mashy niblick. You know, this is not the upstart American Football League going after the established NFL. That's not what LIV is, the LIV. This is just a seedy, tawdry, sickening attempt to prop up the reputation of a monster. Yeah, there we go. Brother Deacon Asa says, two Saudi women found dead in Oz without injuries. Now we know why Putin high-fives MBS every time they meet in person. Back to Alex Jones, Brother Deacon Asa said, 800 G's a day? Fuck! Where did I go wrong in life? Well, you're not, Brother Deacon Asa, here's the problem. You are not an inveterate, pathological, hopeless liar. You are not without, you do not fundamentally lack the ability to care who you hurt with what you do in your everyday activities. And you don't prey on the weakness of others and the weak-mindedness of others. And frankly, Alex Jones, Pink Shrek, the Hannity job, they're all of a piece. We call it right-wing hate radio for a reason. But yeah,
yes, wait. Mohammed, tell me more about this, how you make girls go dead in Sydney, Australia, and they don't get body found for 1 month. I must know more about this. I am wanting to do.
But here's the thing. If there was enough evidence developed, and we know this from the Khashoggi murder, if enough evidence developed that you could draw a bright red line from the royal palace in Riyadh all the way across the Indian Ocean to Sydney, and if you could find a pill bottle with Mohammed bin Bonesaw's own skeevy fingerprints on it, you know what the Australian government would do? Of course. course you know what the, of course you know what the Australian government would do. The Australian government would issue a letter in the strongest possible terms condemning the murder of a pair of sisters in their apartment in Canterbury. And Mohammed bin Bonesaw would say, well, it was not me. I did not do it. Those are not my fingerprints. Ah, but they're your fingerprints. We've got your fingerprints. Those are your fingerprints on the bottle.
Ah, well.
And you know why?
Because oil. Because oil.
Plain and simple. Because Oz needs Saudi oil. Oz, where summer temperatures, it's not summer right now, but even winter temperatures, increasingly warm. Oz, where they could build wind turbines and solar panels enough to power the entire continent. But they need that oil. Remember Prime Minister ScoMo? Who swanned off for a Hawaiian vacation while Australia burned from climate change-induced fires? Yeah. I mean, that's why we didn't embargo Saudi oil when Jamal Khashoggi was chopped into chutney. I'll say it again. You're probably tired of it, but I'll say it again. I am so sick of the United States of America having to have anything to do with any of those goddamn benighted countries over there.
Yeah, but we've got military bases over there.
Why do we have military bases over there? Oh, wait. We raise more corn to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land. We have military bases in the Middle East because we've got to protect the what? The oil. What if we didn't need the oil? How much attention did the United States of America pay to the Saudi Peninsula or the Levant in general before oil became a motivating force, an economic engine? About the closest we got was Tripoli. You know, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. What was it, 1802? We signed the Treaty of Tripoli. You know, that was the famous treaty that said the United States is in no wise founded upon the Christian religion. The Barbary pirates. We had nothing to do with them. We barely knew they existed. Now, granted, we had fleets of whale ships running around the ocean, tormenting at least semi-sentient mammals, great mammals of the sea, because we needed oil for lamps and crap to make perfume out of. I mean, I admit, I like perfume. But I cannot for the life of me imagine dabbing a little bit of dead whale behind my ears every evening just to smell good. Jesus. But the question is it possible that there is a... Is it possible that there's a future where we can cut these barbarians loose? Or do we maintain some fictive notion that somehow or another, one of these days, these people will stop being fucking barbarians? Patriarchal barbarians. Because, I mean, patriarchy. Really. Yeah, Matt, subject line, green energy. Side note, if we could get off oil, we wouldn't have to even deal with the Saudis. They really have not been very kind to the good old USA. So true. And, you know, if we decided to... I'm pro-peace. Now, quit that. I'm pro-peace. But if we decided to bomb the living bejesus out of Saudi Arabia, we could do it. And not feel even a little bit concerned about whether or not we'd have gasoline in our cars. Because our cars would run on energy from the sun. Oh, I know, that's such a long way off. And, of course, if you say any of this to somebody like Joe to the mansion born, he'll... Well, that's why we need to have American-produced energy, Robin. That's why we've got to blow up every goddamn mountain in central Appalachia so that we can achieve your dream of telling the Saudi royal house to go fuck itself. No, no. No, that's not how it works. We're going to throw billions and billions of dollars into carbon capture and sequestration boondoggles when those billions and billions of dollars would be far better spent figuring out how to put wind turbines all over the open, the vast open spaces of the West and send the electricity they generate to Boston and Seattle, etc., etc. Billable Rick says, Phil Mickelson and Liv Golf. I've heard that the main reason Phil Mickelson took $150 million from the blood-soaked Saudi Sovereign Fund, which funds Liv Golf, is that he'd lost most of his fortune by gambling. In fact, before he joined Liv, Phil would take commercial flights. After signing his contract, selling his soul with Liv, Mickelson commented that he now was back to flying on his private jet. It's all about the greed, Billable says. Most professional golfers are GOP assholes who care only about money. You follow golf much more closely than I do now, Billable. Did I see a story somewhere about, and if it is, my respect has gone up considerably. Did I see a story somewhere that Liv went to, the Liv tournament went to, of course, Tiger, and Tiger told him to get fucked? Did I see that? If you don't mind being, if you already know, that's fine. But if you don't mind being the serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Golf Research Department, I see stories blow past, and I, well, sometimes I click on them, and sometimes I don't. It would be interesting to know. Jeremy in Vermont says, same day. The very same day Donald claimed no one has ever solved September 11th, we quietly droned al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri. If you're counting, that's the world's two most wanted terror bastards gone under a Democratic presidency. They say Donald didn't even know who al-Zawahiri was, but he was obsessed over Osama bin Laden's son. These people. And, of course, he's obsessed with crowd sizes, and suffice to say, the crowds at his Bed Monster tournament were, let's see, complicated golf term here, for shit. Oh, I misspoke. We are down to $817. I can't cipher for beans. Thank you, Frank. $817. And if we could get that all the way down to $600, then the fundraising goal would only be $300 because we would have met Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. So, is $217 a possibility? And thank you to Matt, and thank you to Ralphs. Y'all got to it before Billable did. Tiger Woods, true. Matt says, via CNN. Yes, you heard that right, says Ralphs. Tiger did reject Liv's offer. Let's see, what does it say here? Tiger turned down $700 to $800 million to offer $700 to $800 million offer to join the Liv Golf Series, according to Greg Norman, who is the CEO of the Liv Golf Series. Greg Norman. Greg Collapse Norman. Fucker Carlson, because, you know, Greg Norman would be willing to go on the show of the testicle toasting Tucky O. Rose. Tucker asked Greg Norman if it was true that he was offered Tiger was offered $700 to $800 million. And Greg Norman said, "That number was out there before I became CEO, so that number's been out there, yes. Look, Tiger's a needle mover, right?" You know, apparently on Tucker Carlson's program, needle mover means something different than it does in the hills and hollers of almost level west by coal Manchinistan. "So, of course, you're going to look at the best of the best. I had originally approached Tiger before I became CEO. So, yes, that number's somewhere in the neighborhood." Well, you know, I'm proud of you, Tiger. You fucked up a few times along the way, but every now and then, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe that brush with death in that car wreck jarred something loose in your noggin. I don't know. So, well, we're very near the halfway point of the program, and I Phil Robstered my way through it. We've got an abundance more of... Thorn in the Side Thursday material. Oh, thanks, darling. Let's see what... this is huge. I was actually going to lead with this until the Alex Jones thing broke. We usually reserve Thorn in the Side Thursday for things that, you know, do that to us, but it would be unfair of me, having given no small amount of grief to our ponderous Attorney General, you know, the Federalist Society's Merrick Garland. Reuters reporting today something that smells a little bit like an attempt at justice. The news broke this afternoon. Lawyers for the United States Department of Justice have filed charges against four current and former members of the Louisville, Kentucky Police Department, the four cops who literally wasted the life of Breonna Taylor. Lord, it took long enough. But former Louisville Metropolitan Police Department Detective Joshua Janes and current Sergeant Kyle Meany have been charged in federal court via indictment with civil rights violations and obstruction of justice for using false information to obtain the search warrant that authorized the March 13th, 2020 raid in which Breonna Taylor was slaughtered in her bed. Current Detective Kelly Goodlett, also charged as a co-conspirator with Detective Janes to dummy up the warrant and then cover up the dummy up. And then there's Detective Brett Hankinson, who has been indicted for excessive use of force violations of Breonna Taylor's civil rights. Merrick Garland himself came out and made the announcement, saying, "The Justice Department is committed to defending and protecting the civil rights of every person in this country. That was this department's founding purpose, and it remains our urgent mission." He began his statement by saying, Breonna Taylor should be alive today. I'm just asking for a skeptical friend. Do any of those charges carry the possibility of the federal death penalty? Do any of those charges carry the possibility, if not the death penalty, that Hankinson and Janes et al. Will spend the rest of their unnaturally born days in a maximum security prison operated by the Federal Bureau of Prisons? Lawyers for the Taylor family were obviously, well, you can't use like use words like pleased or happy, but they were gratified, I suppose we'd say, by the news. They said, today was a huge step toward justice. This part, however, kind of sticks in my craw. Louisville police, this is a quote from the Reuters story. Louisville police today began the process of firing Meany and Goodlett. That, according to a statement released by the Louisville Police Department. Hankinson and Janes were previously fired. And, of course, you know why Meany and Goodlett, great name, Meany, you know why Meany and Goodlett weren't fired? Because cop union. Because they would have filed a grievance. The best part of this, however, is that the investigation is not complete. Best, sorry. Again, a gratifying aspect of this news is that the investigation is not complete because the DOJ is continuing to investigate the Louisville Metro government and the Louisville Police Department itself. The nature of the inquiry being whether or not those two entities engaged in a pattern or practice of abusing the civil rights of citizens in Louisville. Remember, it was a no-knock raid in which these cops barreled through, guns a-blazing, and wasted the life of young Breonna Taylor. When they broke in, her boyfriend had no way of knowing who was trying to break into the apartment, and he had a legal firearm, and he did what the Rifle Association wanted him to do, and that was start shooting back, because the only way you can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, and as a result of him shooting, they wasted his girlfriend. They fired 22 rounds into the apartment and wasted Breonna in her sleep. Hankinson, in particular, according to the Department of Justice, moved away from the door and fired 10 shots into Taylor's apartment through a window and a glass door that were covered with blinds and curtains. Hankinson testified before a Kentucky grand jury
that he thought he seen somebody with an assault rifle. And they were shooting at his brothers in blue.
Turned out what he actually heard were his brothers in blue firing away at two innocent people. Not guilty. Innocent people. A few days after the slaughter, Janes and Goodlett, according to the allegations, met in a garage and hatched the plan to dummy up the documentation. They created, they came up with a bullshit story. To cover for the raid that should never even have taken place. Hankinson's lawyer says,
he's on his way to surrender to the FBI.
Why didn't the FBI go get him? Why didn't the FBI say, where is he? And go get him and cuff him and stuff him in a car and perp walk him in orange? Why? Because remember, one of the central facts about the slaughter of Breonna Taylor was that they had the wrong people. Wrong apartment. That's where that dummied up bullshit about,
we thought he was in that apartment,
came from. Because cops lie. When the rubber meets the road, a cop will lie to cover his own ass. You know, kind of like Alex Jones. But like I said, we've given Merrick Garland a lot of grief. Deservedly so. Kind of still waiting on the indictment of Matt Gaetz. You know? But in this case, apparently they wanted it. And hopefully, and at least this is the way it's said to work in the federal system. Tell me otherwise, Billable, if I'm wrong. Generally speaking, it was a rule of thumb I always learned that when the federal indictment comes down, they've got you. That they're not going to indict on close cases. That they build everything and they charge what they can charge because, among other things, the U.S. government doesn't like to lose. So maybe, just maybe, there'll be something that resembles justice for the still grieving family of Breonna Taylor. Of course, Louisville being Louisville, it's entirely likely that when it comes to trial, if this government is as dirty and corrupt as it appears, or may be, they'll use the trial of these four homicidal cops. They'll use that as a reason to suppress the black community in Louisville. But that's just me being cynical, right? Yeah. Oh dear, thank you, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut, breaking news. Police respond to active incident at Mall of America in Minnesota. Whatever that means, active incident. That's all there is in the way of news, or in the way of substance. This country. So, at the halfway point of this program, with $817 to go, $217 to go to just meet the beginning of the month challenge, I hate to haul out the please, but we do, and always have, run on the last frayed shoestring, the last frayed thread of a dry-rotted shoestring here. We need to get that $217 in so we can at least cover a couple of days. Because, again, this program lives very close to not existing every month. I wish I could, and you know, there are things I want to do. I'd like to go to Netroots Nation and broadcast from there. Don't know how that happens. I looked up the hotel rooms. They're $200 a night. But it would be nice. It would be nice. But right now, the immediate problem is paying bills that are past due. If we could do that, it would be wonderful. And in the meantime, let's see what Brad and Desi are up to this evening. Okay? Cool.
It's Thursday, August 4, 2022.
A week doesn't go by now when there isn't a devastating example of the deadly power of a changing climate.
Back-to-back extreme storms show the U.S. is not ready for climate impacts.
And while temperatures are reaching near records, it's the humidity that's making the conditions more dangerous.
Yep, climate change is also increasing humidity across the U.S. Big corporations launch ad blitz to sink Democrats' budget deal. Plus,
it's a chicken and egg thing, but we want to make sure that charging is ubiquitous.
America's first ever national EV charging network is on its way.
All of those firsts and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Water isn't the only thing we're running out of. Clean air. Quality soil, rainforests, wetlands, the precious metals that make our phones work. We're even running out of sand. Sand, which may not seem important, but without it, you can't make concrete or glass, like for windows, so you can look outside and see the world ending.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, there's a lot of anxiety and concern on the Democratic side of the aisle in the U.S. Senate over this massive climate bill as we wait to find out if Kyrsten Sinema will come along with the rest of her party.
Yes, and big corporations are making their voices heard. They and their lobbying groups are spending big on a last-ditch effort to stop the bill. The National Association of Manufacturers, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the Koch Network of dark money groups have launched a barrage of digital and TV ads in Arizona, urging Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema to kill or at least significantly maim the Last Chance climate bill.
Yep.
While we wait for the fate of that, climate change impacts are waiting for no one. If it seems like the U.S. is getting pummeled with back-to-back extreme rain events, you're not wrong. An overnight storm deluged southern Illinois on Monday with more than a foot of rain in 12 hours, the third one-in-a-thousand-year rain event in the country in a week. It was part of the same stalled weather system that produced unprecedented rain and deadly flooding in St. Louis and eastern Kentucky.
So it's not so much one in a thousand years, but three in the past week.
Exactly. Studies confirm that man-made climate change has increased the frequency and the intensity of rainfall in the U.S. since the 1950s. Other studies predict that extreme rainfall and flooding will get worse in coming decades if governments fail to cut greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change. Emerging data increasingly links stalled, persistent weather systems, both heat and rain, to warming in the Arctic, which may be slowing the jet stream that steers weather systems across the U.S. This summer is repeatedly demonstrating that infrastructure designed for the 20th century is unable to withstand the changed climate of today, let alone tomorrow.
Yep.
Here's climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann in a recent interview on MSNBC.
It's a reminder that climate change isn't a far-off threat. It's impacting us now and with greater magnitude than we predicted, say, just a decade ago.
And as the saying goes, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. That, too, is increasing in the U.S. According to a new analysis by Climate Central, humid heat in the summertime has increased three times more than air temperatures since the 1950s.
Wow.
The report warns that when extreme heat combines with high humidity, it multiplies the health health risks of heat waves, particularly for vulnerable populations like children and the elderly, especially in regions with little or no air conditioning. But some good news. The Biden administration launched a new initiative this week to boost assistance to local governments in low-income communities, which tend to lack staff and capacity, in order to help them apply for federal funding to replace their crumbling wastewater, drinking water, and stormwater systems under Biden's massive infrastructure bill passed last year. The Biden administration will also reverse a Trump-era policy that opened up 1 million acres of public lands in California to new oil and gas drilling. It's part of a court settlement in a lawsuit brought by the state.
Nice.
Finally, it ain't sexy, but a national electric vehicle charging network is now on its way to becoming reality. This week, all 50 states, plus Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, submitted their concrete plans to the federal government to build EV fast charging stations under the infrastructure law. To qualify for federal funds, the stations must be fast chargers with multiple connectors that can reach an 80% charge in 10 minutes or less, and will be placed at a minimum of every 50 miles on all major transit corridors, with a special initiative to spread EV chargers in rural areas.
I disagree. I think that's very sexy. For much more on all of those sexy stories and more, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Get you sexy, huh? I'm bringing sexy back. Yeah. Get you sexy, huh? Go ahead, get you sexy, huh? Get you sexy, huh? Go ahead, get you sexy, huh? Go ahead, get you sexy, huh? Get you sexy,
huh? All right, and, well, great, great bumper, Desi, I guess. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. If you're just tuning in, well, but you know that. And I thought it would, given the gravity of the first half of the program, I thought it would be appropriate, because I just kind of wanted to make mention of this, because it just annoys the living bejesus out of me. It's from the Department of why do we have to set ourselves up to lose? By the way, I'll be going to the stress line in a minute. The Skype line's open if you'd like to join in. Here's the setup. We all know by now pretty well about how the multimillionaire for-profit media works when it goes about the business of plotting out the programs. You know, Booker calls, gets it. And while this story deals with a particular member of Congress, the narrative is driven from the multi-billion dollar for-profit media industrial complex. In this case, it was it was Carolyn Maloney, and it was CNN, and somebody at CNN, you always wonder about, you know, you know, that vaunted objectivity in journalism is really, seriously, horseshit. Oh, by the way, Ralph says, come on, people, make me pay. Don't make me sick lassie on y'all, talking about the challenge remains on the table. Carolyn Maloney is running for re-election in New York's 12th congressional district this year. And during a primary debate on Tuesday night, she opened her mouth and stuck her foot in it. What do I mean by that? Well, like I said, the media drives the narrative. And she tried to walk some shit back, but not so much. the thing is, on Tuesday night at the debate up in New York's 12th district, she said she doesn't believe Joe Biden is going to run for re-election. God damn it. Sorry. This just... Oh, these are unforced errors. Congresswoman Maloney, love you, hon. How does that have anything to do with your race for re-election? You've got to save your own. You know, it's out of straight out of Blazing Saddles. Huh. We've got to protect our phony baloney jobs. And I'm not saying she's a bad member of Congress, Carolyn Maloney. I'm not. But she's got a race to run in her own behalf. Why would you even bother to dignify a question in a debate about whether you think Joe Biden's going to run for re-election? What does that have to do with whether or not she wins her primary and whether or not she remains the incumbent for the 12th District of New York? Nothing! Not a goddamn thing! But there she was, and so then there's a booker over at CNN who calls and gets hold of her press creature, and the press creature says, "Oh, yeah, we'll be happy to be on CNN's New Day there. Congresswoman Maloney just loves Breonna Keeler." And this is not nothing against Breonna Keeler. At least not much. Goddamn. Can we please not do this? And it's not just Carolyn Maloney. The CNN article, without so much as really naming other names, says, "The comments from Maloney drew attention as she's the latest high-profile Democrat to publicly cast doubt on a second Biden term." And then it goes on, well, you know, Joe Biden's the oldest person ever to sit in the office of the presidency at 80. Well, goddamn! Nitwit Nero is 76! There's not that much difference between 76 and 80. You know, in the grand scheme of things, earlier in life, you know, if and it works both ways, if a woman's 30 and she goes after a guy who's 20, or if a guy's 30 and goes after a woman who's 20, it's like, ah! On the other hand, a 76-year-old getting together with a 66-year-old, not so much. You've got a lived life behind you. You see my point. Joe Biden hasn't had nearly the stumbles and falters and moments of dementia that Nitwit Nero was good for 4 freaking years.
But he may be too old. Oh, he may be too old to run for president a second time.
Asked Thursday by CNN's Breonna Keeler why she thinks Biden won't seek the White House again, Maloney replied that it was just my own personal belief. Well, we're all, and Breonna Keeler, yeah, but what is that belief, Congresswoman? Well, we're all entitled to have our own information and our own beliefs. The hell kind of statement is that? We really need to not be doing this. It plays into a bullshit narrative that the GOP is going to have a field day running with.
Oh, he's too old. He's senile. He probably needs to be 25th Amendmented.
4 years we talked about the 25th Amendment on this program. Section 4 in particular. And came up with chapter and verse why it should have been repeatedly invoked if the cabinet of Nitwit Nero had anything resembling loyalty to the Constitution and to the people of the United States of America. But, well, why would we even mention that? They didn't. They only bailed, 3 of them. Betsy DeVos, Elaine Chao, who was that other dude? When it looked like it might have been their ass in the sling with him, suddenly it mattered. But history is a thing, and I remember in 1980 when Ted Kennedy ran against primaried Jimmy Carter, when Jimmy Carter had been shellacked with the same bullshit, some of the same bullshit that Biden's dealing with, as if inflation was Jimmy Carter's problem. It wasn't. It was set up. It was ongoing during his predecessor's term in office. You know, Gerald Ford was,
my friends, I want you to put this this win button. I want you to wear a win button everywhere. What does win mean, my fellow Americans? It means whip inflation now.
Now am I aching back?
Whew! And, you know, sorry, why ain't Joe Biden doing nothing about them gas prices?
Yeah, as if he actually was in charge of gas prices. He's not the president of the gas pump. And I know I'm excuse-making here, and it's problematic. As Karl Rove once said, the only thing I ever agreed with that little fart on, if you're explaining, you're losing. Joe Biden's not a terrible president. Joe Biden is not Dianne Feinstein, for God's sakes. He knows where he is. He's oriented as to time, place, and whatever. Now, I'm sure he can remember man, woman, camera, TV. And yet, this narrative, this bullshit narrative persists.
High-ranking Democrats who think that Joe Biden won't run again.
Well, let the feeding frenzy begin. By all means, we haven't even gotten the 2022 midterms out of the way. Joe Biden has not been in office for two entire years. And the buzzards are circling. Makes me want to get my wrist rocket out and take out a couple of buzzards with a couple of boneless wings from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Things are harder than Babylonian arithmetic.
But Carolyn Maloney had to backtrack a little bit and said, it's totally his decision, but I'll support him if he runs. Mr. President, I apologize. I want you to run. I happen to think you won't be running, but when you run, or if you run, I'll be there 100%. Is it just me? Or do you find this embarrassing too? I mean, who is there that's out there that we want more than Joe Biden? I know. He is not anywhere near ideologically pure enough. But he's proposed an agenda that's probably the most liberal agenda since FDR. And I mean, as liberals, as progressives, we did want that, didn't we? Yes, he went and swanned around Saudi Arabia, and that just made me want to puke. But he didn't hold hands with Mohammed bin Bonesaw and go walking through the bluebells like W did and kiss him right on the mouth eater. The fuck is wrong with us? It just annoys the dog. Please stop. Representative Maloney, please stop. And whoever these other high-ranking Democrats are, please, shut it! Are they just craving screen time? Is that it? Is someone fostering these rumors? I mean, I just don't see it being Vice President Harris. Who else is there out there that is yearning for the job? And hungry to see us lose in 2024. Stand by. I'm kind of beside myself with this willingness to form up a circular firing squad and yell, fire! But again, maybe it's just me. And it just makes me feel like we're screwed. Kim in New York City says, "Nick's on Carolyn Maloney." Well, she just lost my vote. Nadler it is. Not enthusiastic about him, but there it is. Ah, this is one of those redistricting races. Is that what you're telling me, Kim? For the life of me, I don't understand why you fall for something like that. I don't. Kat in Ohio, thank you so much. Thank you for... Kat just got us down to only $117 to go to meet Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Thank you, Kat. And Matt just wrote in from San Francisco and said, here's a $25 keep Robin from broadcasting while having her nails dig into the ceiling challenge. If only you knew how true that was, Matt. Thank you. So that would get us down to $67. And maybe meeting that challenge in an hour is not impossible. It sure would be a humongous help, I can promise you that. But do you see these stories? Does it do to you what it does to me? Because then it made me think about, who's driving this? And if this would, Kim in New York, tell me, did you watch the debate? Or, I mean, I can't help but wonder how Jerry Nadler handled it, if he got the same question. Of course, Jerry Nadler is considerably, isn't he, more powerful than Carolyn Maloney? Lee and Kim both said, yeah, it's redistricting. They used to be in different congressional districts, but due to redistricting, they're running against each other. Thanks, Kim, and thanks, Lee. I can think of somebody I could support in 2024 who wasn't Biden. I will keep that to myself because I don't want to add to the problem. I want Biden to run again. I want him to be a two-term president. Because historically, primarying the incumbent is not a good idea. There was all manner of skullduggery and dirty trickery going on in 1980, but having Ted Kennedy beat up Jimmy Carter during a primary season went a long way towards sealing Jimmy Carter's fate. And I think that will, Republicans like to talk about something else with regard to Edward M. Kennedy. But whenever I think about any stains on his memory and his reputation, that's what I think of. Essentially giving us Ronald Reagan. I mean, it's almost like we don't know how, Democrats don't know how to, they don't know how to be a political party anymore. You support your incumbents, generally speaking. I don't know. It's frustrating as hell. I have a huge migraine, Emilio says. What's Joe Biden doing to fix it?
Thanks, Joe Biden.
Not this shit again. Yeah. So let's run over to the stress line, see who we've got on the phone. I hate making people wait. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin.
How are you, Dave?
Well, it has not been a good week for me, starting with the death of Michelle Nichols. And then this crap. If I were a betting man, I would say it's probably a couple of two or three Democratic senators, because every senator wants to be president. You don't get into that club without wanting to be president at some point.
Okay. Can you narrow it down a little bit, Dave? Who do you think? I mean, it's not.
Believe it or not,
it's not Chuckles.
I don't think it's a Democrat, actually.
Well, no. This has to be happening inside the Democratic Party for other Democrats to be saying, "I don't think he's going to run."
Well, here's my point. It starts with a Republican like Braun, or that, and he's talking to his good friend Joe Manchin, and then Joe ends up talking to someone else in the Democratic Party, and oh, they have a chuckle because Biden stammered over something, even though the man's had a stammer his entire life.
Yeah, but see, Dave, this doesn't fit the model. There are numerous Democrats, apparently. I think I saw the number, you know, in excess of, well, no, I can't be certain, so I shouldn't say. But the thing is, these are Democrats who are saying, I don't think he's going to run. This has nothing to do with Republicans. So the question is, who are the Democrats who want to run for president, who want to challenge an incumbent Democratic president? In what
I can't think of anybody right off. I mean, Biden, contrary to what his poll numbers are, is still a fairly strong candidate. I mean, the man's been around since the earth was cooling. He's not stupid. He's not incompetent. He may have played around a little too long in adjusting from my good friends in the Senate to I'm now president of the fucking United States. But, you know, he's made mistakes. One is trusting his good friend Mitch McConnell and thinking that he can rein in Sinema and Manchin, which...
Well, I've got another Manchin story in the stack here.
Oh, please, no. Oh, dear God, no.
It's typical. By the way, Darlene in Connecticut said when Jerry Nadler got the question, he hedged on Biden running again, too. Totally noncommittal from what I heard. What's...
Oh, dear God.
You know, when these Congress critters run away from their sitting president... It's not good.
It's definitely a problem. And then you've got Nazis running on the Republican side, and I'm not going to mince words. They're goose-stepping fascists.
Yeah, they are. And of course, the biggest name being mentioned in that group is, of course, Ron Monkey up DeKlantis.
Yeah, but let us not discount. That half governor from the half governor of Alaska.
Oh, the half term half wit. No, no, no. She's out. No, of the, no. She's out of the mix. She's done.
I honestly, she's a joke even in Alaska.
Right, yeah, she's just a reality TV star at this point. She's not in it, but Ron Monkey up DeClantis, yeah. I think, given what will probably happen to her in her primary in Wyoming, I think Liz Cheney might run in her own right. I don't think she'll win the Republican nomination, but she would be hell on wheels against anybody who is
Trump.
Against Trump or anyone who is supportive of Trump or tries to be a denier of what happened on January 6, 2021.
So how in the world do we fuck this up by having a divided Republican Party, which it is, and...
Well, the way we fucked this up, Dave, is by having a bunch of Democrats running around saying, oh, I don't know, I don't think Joe Biden's going to run again.
You know, I think Will Rogers had it right.
I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
Exactly. How the Democratic Party has stayed around this long, I have no clue. Because in the last 40 years, they've been nothing but taking the drippings from the anal cavities of Republicans.
Oh, now don't do that to dinner. Now quit that.
I'm sorry, but that's true.
Yeah,
they've been taking their shit for all this time.
Don't say it twice. Now quit that.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry. But you get my point. If we would start being the people who say we stand up for the people of the United States, we would throw these bums out on their fucking ears. But we're too afraid. That's the problem. I mean, you got Democrats who aren't afraid, who are willing to call it out as it is. People like my congressman, Andre Carson, who was the first member of Congress to call Mitt Whitmire out on his anti-Islamic screeds. And it wasn't just because he's a practicing Muslim.
No, it's because racism is racism is racism is racism.
And he did it very eloquently. And a lot of people don't realize, except maybe the Republicans here in Indianapolis, understand that a guy like Carson is going to be in the Congress for as long as he wants because of his grandmother and his performance after he was elected to her seat. He's done a good job. And he's very well liked in this district. So he's got a job for as long as he wants it. He's going to be one of those guys who serves 20, 24 years in the Congress before he bows out, and he's nowhere near that. I think he's got like another 18 years to go before he even approaches that. But you're getting every 10 years you get redistricting in Indiana that favors the Republicans, and they can't seem to crack Indianapolis because the largest group of black voters in Indiana is in Marion County.
And they have better sense than to ever vote for a Republican.
Exactly. I mean, you forget, Madam C.J. Walker made Indianapolis her company's headquarters. Her shadow is still felt in this city. I used to live near a place called Indiana Avenue, which used to be a well-respected black neighborhood in Indianapolis. Madam Walker built a theater there that had a lot of African motifs, and she just spent scads of money on this place. It's a beautiful building. It's still there. It's still operational. But when I lived down there, it was a dregs. I mean, the neighborhood was falling apart. The first public housing project in the United States was Lockfield Gardens that was down in that area. It's now been restored to what it was, you know, back in the 40s. But back when I lived there, it was abandoned and it was falling apart. I used to walk down through there at night, and people would ask me, well, aren't you afraid to walk down there at night? No, because I knew every individual homeless person that was sleeping on the sidewalk, and I made sure that I didn't step on them. And when I saw them during the day, I would say hello to them because they were my neighbors. A lot of those guys taught me to fight, taught me different ways I could use my canes to defend myself. And when somebody gave me grief, one of them said, leave him alone. He lives in this neighborhood. You know, so I felt very safe. Indianapolis is a very strange city from the rest of Indiana. It's a bright spot of civilization. But you still get your fascists and your goddamn snake handlers and the rest of that bunch. You know, however, there is a church I'm going to check out. The First Church of Cannabis has its mother church here in Indianapolis.
Well, now.
And they believe that marijuana is a sacramental herb. However, that's already been adjudicated and the court laughed him out of the room. But they advocate being happy and making other people happy. On Wednesday nights, they have people coming in, comedians coming in to the church and telling jokes just to make other people feel happy and loved, you know. And I've been looking into it. My therapist knows the founder of the church. And I'm like, First Church of Cannabis. He said, yeah, the first service, every other person was a DEA agent. So the word went out not to bring any of your stash to the services.
Probably good, yeah.
I mean, because you can advocate for legalization and treating cannabis as a sacred herb all you want. That's covered under the First and Second First Amendment. You know, both speech and religion, but they have always had some presence from federal law enforcement.
Well, I told you, I said a minute ago that I have a another mansion story.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Senate voted on a resolution today. It was put forward by Republicans, I should note. Mm-hmm. And the resolution was to nullify changes that the Biden administration had put through to tighten environmental standards for major projects. Okay? You see where this is going.
Yes, I do, and I know where he's going.
Well, this is. I mean, you probably, yeah, you do. So, 50-47 was the vote. 50 votes to nullify the Biden administration's rulemaking. 47 opposed to the resolution. Every Republican voted for it. Plus Joe.
Well, he's a good Republican, Robin. No, let's not put too fine a point on it.
And basically, the rule was fine. The rule in question was it reached final status last April, and it says that federal agencies have to look at both indirect and cumulative environmental impacts under under National Environmental Policy Act review. But here's where the difference comes in. The review also, alongside with the indirect and cumulative environmental impacts, has to include climate change impacts.
Ooh.
And so, you know, all the Republicans were all brooga, 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 the job-killing regulations, yada, yada, yada. Eee! And,
but it's a resolution. It's not a bill.
No, it's a resolution, and if it cleared both houses...
It's a sense of the Senate?
No, if it's a resolution, if it clears both houses, it would do what it says it's going to do, be it resolved that the Senate hereby.
Oh, good Lord.
It goes to the House. It probably will not pass the House.
But if
by some miracle it were to pass the House, then Joe Biden would veto it, and they couldn't override it.
But they'd have something to campaign on.
Well, sure, and it would polish Joe's credentials with the people who polish other things of Joe's with lots and lots of money.
Yeah. You know, they polish the brass on his house. Is it, you know, all the bright work on the Almost Heaven or whatever it's called, yeah, out there in the Potomac?
It wasn't what I had in mind, but that'll do. Joe, of course, ballyhooed and brayed about it. He said, this is a step in the right direction. I hope every Republican that voted for this legislation today will support the bipartisan permitting reform bill when it comes before the Senate in September. Because remember, that permitting reform bill is the climate bomb that I was talking about a couple of nights ago.
Yeah.
The one that fast-tracks, say, a pipeline through West Virginia that is the equivalent of 26 brand-new, filth-belching, coal-fired power plants.
And of course, you know, damn what it does to the water and the environment and the hillbillies in West Virginia.
Well, yeah, damn the hillbillies. Because, full speed ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I came up with that one right off.
How the hell do they keep electing this piece of shit?
Now, we've been through this, sure. Dave. We have been through this.
I know.
100 times.
I know. I mean, it reminds me of the attitude of my fellow Hoosiers. You know, well, God's a Republican. You still hear that around here.
Yeah.
Well, show me in the Bible where God's a Republican, where he actually comes out and says he's a Republican. Because his boy's been referred to as the King of Kings, and that doesn't sound like any Republican ideal, period. You know, it's rule from on high. Ain't no republic about it.
Exactly.
But
I know.
Good boy.
I know.
But I also want to let the Warren Family Community Congregation know that Chris has her new kitty.
Yay.
His name is not Chairman Meow, it's Stomper.
Damn it. I was rooting for Chairman Meow.
I was too, but Christine went to the animal shelter and they examined him, and he had a previous chip with a name on it, so she decided to keep the name.
Well, you know, there's a very complicated ritual that you have to go through to change the name of either a boat or a cat. And failing to do so can yield disastrous consequences.
Well, we don't have any lead plates to carve the old name on and that sort of thing. I'm familiar with the rituals. It is convoluted and not always effective because some nautical deity or the goddess of ironing. if it's done for vain purposes, you know, he is a very affectionate kitty.
Oh, good. What? And Christine, I mean, is he of any particular type?
He is, I believe Christine said he is a tabby mix of some variety. And she went to introduce him slowly, and he bolted out of the bathroom after 2 days and decided to introduce himself to the other two cats in the house, which now that there are three cats, they're officially a clowder, which is what you call a group of cats.
Yes.
I was doing some research. A female cat is known as a Molly, unless she is pregnant or has had kittens. Then she's known as a queen.
Ah.
And so, Little Miss Lucy Purr, Morning Paws, is a Molly.
Yes.
And probably one who's very full of herself.
Oh, she's adorable. She's just adorable.
Of course she is, because she turns on the cuteness. It's like, I've got these humans wrapped around my Duplo right here.
The best part is when I go to the bathroom and she runs in after me and sits on my shoulder.
Oh, you have a parrot cat.
Yes, a parrot cat. I didn't know if you knew what those were, but yes, I have a parrot cat.
Yeah.
But the best part is she's not content to just jump up on my shoulder. She has to jump up on my shoulder and then, in the narrow confines of my shoulders, turn around and face the other direction.
Well, as long as she's not giving you the tail, you're fine. And by giving the tail, I mean when they walk away with their tail upright.
Yes, on a, yeah.
In the air.
Wait a minute. I got to share this with you. Matt in San Francisco just wrote in and said, subject line, queen. Never had kittens, but many refer to me as a queen.
Yes, Matt.
And damn,
well, we were talking cats.
They damned well better, Matt.
Guys, yeah. Okay. Cowbell for Matt.
And by the way, Matt said earlier, subject line, loyal. Oh, by the way, billable Rick. See, I was acting on billable Rick's behalf earlier when you spoke up. Billable Rick said, please tell Dave to stop making references to bowel contents. For Christ's sake, I'm trying to eat my late afternoon snack here in Cali. See? I'm trying not to ruin, Rick's afternoon snack or dinner for that matter in the Mountain Standard time zone. As regards to loyalty, however, Matt in San Francisco said, you're on to something, sister. The other side stood by their president, who never cracked a 47% approval. They supported him through gassing protesters, separating children from their families, lying about election results, two impeachments, and a fucking insurrection. But when gas prices climbed over $5 a gallon, some Democrats seemed to be tiptoeing backwards away from Joe. What possible good comes from saying you think Joe may not run? Do they think they'll get some right-wing Let's Go Brandon chanter to vote for them? This has got to be the stupidest strategy I've ever seen. Amen, Matt. That's two cowbells. And by the way, Matt's challenge is still on the table. We are trying to get down to $67 on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. In fact, frankly, that would get it. $25 matching Matt would get us down to $67 if we could do the other $67 in the next half hour, too. So $67, $77, $87, and $5, $92. $92 funds 2 days of broadcasting with the challenge. So thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Like Ralph said, make me pay. Don't make me call Lassie. So, Dave, I'm glad to know that Christine has her kitty. And, I hope next week is better than this week for you. And let's go ahead.
I hope so.
Indeed.
I hope so.
Well, let's do talk soon, okay? And
Robin.
Be well, and tell the boys down at the shop that Mama said hey.
All right, I will. They'll be quite happy. I mean, you know, there's been so much cross jumping lately that they've been working overtime.
I understand.
And
with the war in Ukraine, the price of raw materials has simply gone through the roof.
Well, even if we source it locally, I mean, you get those hand forged crucifixion fasteners from Europe, and those are the top shelf fasteners.
Well, right, and I know a top notch shop like yours would never use
use a cheap Chinese knockoff. No.
Yeah, the cheap Chinese knockoff brads they tend to crumble, and it's kind of embarrassing. Well, you got a perfectly good crucifixion going on, the staple breaks, and suddenly you've got a dude on a windmill.
Well, and the other problem is, those fat fundamentalists out there, you put it through their wrist and it just, I don't know whether they're suffering from osteoporosis or what, but we've had a few unfortunate breakages lately, and that's had us have to call in a quick dispatch team, because in order to fulfill our contract, we have to bury them for 3 days.
Well, yeah,
and
that adds to cost, and sure.
It's a real pain in the butt, especially when you're dealing with the gravediggers unions.
The Sexton's Union is just, they're
tougher than the Teamsters.
Well, yeah, and they're a bunch of stiffs.
And they know where the bodies are buried.
Oh, we're good this evening. I'm giving us both a cowbell for that exchange, Dave. They know where the bodies are.
Yeah.
Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well, a man of infinite jest. All right, Dave, you take care. See you later.
All right, honey.
Bye now.
Bye.
So, thanks, Dave. That last part was good. Yeah, they know where the bodies are buried. That was beautiful, Dave. That was well played indeed. Going back, Lee in New York said, Nadler on Biden, it's fine to say that you do not want to speak for the president regarding what he has not said, and then say you support the president. That works, yeah. I got another one sitting here, just sort of looks very thorn in the sidey. I mean, I'm going to be picking out festering thorns for a day after an evening like this. Remember Matt Schlapp? Matt and Mercedes, big time maggots, used to complain back in the day. They would complain about the millionaire elites when, you know, they were, well, millionaire elites. Well, he's the founder now of the Conservative Political Action Conference. And invited because they're all such hopeless little fanboys and fangirls of Viktor Orban of Hungary, who is I guess he holds the title of fascist icon for the Republican Party. They get all misty when they think about the modern Nazism of a Viktor Orban. Matt Schlapp is catching some grief. Not that it's even going to slow Matt Schlapp down. For inviting Hungary's Viktor Orban to speak at his conservative political action conference. The reason he's catching grief is because Viktor Orban, I swear he's got a wrinkle on his head that looks like the Reichsadler. It does, the Reichsadler. I'm not kidding. I'm looking at a picture of him. You know, the with the eagle facing and the wings out straight. That's what the wrinkles on this fucker's forehead look like, because Goddess of Irony. It was back last month when giving a speech. He, to get all Maya Angelou about it, he told people who he is. The question is, did they believe him the first time? And it wasn't really the first time. He keeps telling people who he is. Viktor Orban. He said, we Hungarians are not a mixed race. We do not want to become a mixed race. Countries where races mix are no longer nations. And he's been alluding to that kind of crap for a while, but this is the first time that he just really... I mean, he did everything but holler about the miscegenating. Is you is or is you ain't my constituency. Oh, brother, where art thou? The opposition Momentum Party and a member of the European Parliament, Caitlin Seh, said, his statements recall a time I think we would all like to forget. They really show the true colors of the regime. And no, there are people of mixed ethnicities in Hungary. I mean, for God's sakes! Hungary was literally it was an intersection of various ethnicities from Asia and Europe at one point. Caitlin Seh said, your skin color may be different. You may come from Europe or beyond, but you are one of us, talking to Hungarians, and we are proud of you. Diversity strengthens the nation. It doesn't weaken it. The member of the European Parliament for Romania, Alin Mutucha, said, speaking about race or ethnic purity, especially in such a mixed region such as Central and Eastern Europe, is purely delusional and dangerous, and so is Mr. Orban. And he actually made, Orban did, he made the remarks not in Hungary, but in Romania. And he went on to say that the West is in decline. The West. What West? There, that business of the West is so much horseshit. He said that a decade of peril, uncertainty, and war is upon the continent. And said that and announced his profound disagreement with Europe's support for Ukraine against Mother Russia. That was a statement delivered to an audience of one, you know, Putin. He noted, the more modern weapons NATO gives Ukrainians, the more the Russians will push the front line forward. What we are doing is prolonging the war. Yeah, you know why we're prolonging the war? Why Ukraine is prolonging the war? Because they don't want they don't want to subject themselves to the tender mercies of Mother Russia. And Orban is in his fourth term. But race mixing. Oh, for God's sakes. Huh. 1933 all over again. Well, Matt Schlapp was not bothered. He showed up on Real America's Voice and noted that, we had a conservative political action conference meeting in Hungary. All these people talking about how racist conservatives are because of immigration or that. Oh, God, here we go again. And I was like, how about this? How about in America we stop killing our own unborn children? But he wasn't done, Matt Schlepp. You know, we're killing unborn kids of color. More blacks are aborted than are allowed to live. I'm not for that. They say we're the racists. Stop funding Planned Parenthood. Stop funding the genocide of that young black child. I want to embrace them into our civilization. They want to give them the death sentence. Good God. Yeah. Yeah, they care about the unborn black babies until they're born black babies, and, well, then they turn the police loose on them. I mean, for God's sakes, black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to experience a pregnancy-related death than white women. And the risk is not limited to incomes. It is across the board relative to income and education levels. That from the Texas Tribune. God's sakes. Answering an allegation of racism by showing... tell me you're as racist as Viktor Orban without telling me directly that you're as racist as Viktor Orban. Oh, for... yeah. Going back to what we were talking about Liz Cheney a little earlier, Lee in New York said, Cheney will not be president, although she could win in the general election. She will not win a primary. No, you have to goose step to win a primary in the Republican Party these days. Now, what else? Because we've got a little bit of time left in the program, about 20 minutes. Hey, it's Conversation Radio. If you'd like to get involved in said conversation, you're welcome to. It sure would be nice if somebody would meet Matt in San Francisco's Keep Robin from Digging her Nails into the Ceiling challenge. That would be helpful indeed. I missed this one over the meaning to share this earlier in the week, but interesting story coming out of New York. It is the story of an Iranian dissident, a journalist. Her name is Masi Alinejad. I'm probably making a mess of her name, and I apologize. She's a journalist. She's a broadcaster with Voice of America. Last year, the Iranian regime tried to kidnap her because one of the things that she does at Voice of America is she advocates for expanded rights for Iranian women. You know, it's worth remembering that before the glorious Iranian Revolution, women were able to live pretty well secular lives and didn't have to walk around unless they wanted to, with their heads covered or feel ashamed for being women because Allah didn't like them as much or whatever. The Iranian regime went from trying to kidnap her to just trying to kill her. And I love the way that this NBC News article is written. The FBI wants to know why a man was near the New York City home of a well-known Iranian journalist and author while allegedly in possession of an illegal military-style rifle loaded with 30 rounds. Inquiring minds. Yeah. He was federally charged with possession of a firearm. I'm sure the case will go to the Supreme Court and our majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign, noble, supreme Catholic majesties will say, well, what are you arresting him for? He's just carrying a gun. Iran has attacked Ms. Alinejad's social media. Yeah, she's on the Persian service, by the way. I'm sure Iran tries to block that. She said they not only wanted to make sure that I physically didn't exist anymore, they also wanted to destroy my Instagram, Facebook, Telegram, and WhatsApp channels. Jesus. Meanwhile, Iran has said, oh, your claims that we tried to kidnap her are baseless. You know, just like the Saudis will say if the Australians say anything about them maybe having murdered a pair of Saudi sisters, at least one of whom was queer. Mali Alinejad said, my crime is giving voice to voiceless people. So who was the guy with the gun? Well, the NYPD arrested Khalid Mekhdiev of Yonkers near her residence last Thursday for, wait for it, not being in possession of an assault rifle with 30 rounds. No, they arrested him on a charge of driving on a suspended license. Yeah, okay, you got a gun, buddy, but you know what? The suspended license, we're taking you in. Because imagine this is just another one of those moments. It's kind of like the Patriot Front Nazis who got busted in that place in Idaho with a van load of Nazis ready to go in and beat hell out of and possibly slaughter LGBTQ people at a pride event. The cops caught him by accident because a desk clerk at a hotel said, do you know that there's a truckload of Nazis out there? Don't say. Well, in this case, the police initially stopped Khalid Mediev for running a stop sign. It was a California stop. It was a roller. Just kind of rolled slowly through, and on went the lights. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And now he's being held without bond. I guess he's on Rikers Island. I mean, I make a little bit light of it, but this is scary shit. Because thanks to years of strongly worded denunciations, certain countries feel like they can come over here and murder their nationals with impunity. Jesus. On and on and on, right? And, of course, things are a little tense. Hey, Horst! Our buddy Horst over in Taiwan. Annette's been worrying about you, Horst. Reuters reporting that Taiwan scrambled jets because 22 Chinese fighters crossed the median line of the Taiwan Straits. 27 Chinese aircraft entered Taiwanese airspace. And this is, of course, dick measuring between the communist Chinese and President, the brutal ruler Xi Jinping. Remember, Nitwit Nero was so fond of him. He said, "I want to be president forever, just like Xi Jinping." Remember that? And hopefully it doesn't come to anything. There were 16 Chinese Su-30 fighters and 11 other jets. And China will apparently do naval exercises this week inside of waters that Taiwan claims. Wars and rumors of wars. Oh, the Taliban have finally said something about Ayman al-Zawahiri. Actually, they said nothing. The something they said was nothing. We don't know. We don't know what he was doing in Afghanistan. An official statement out of Kabul said, "The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has no information about Ayman al-Zawahiri's arrival and stay in Kabul. Problem is, he was inside a restricted zone, and you know, well, I don't know. Maybe they put a burqa on him, and you know, you don't want to look under the burqa or anything, because that might make the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky angry at you or something." He was 71. And apparently on a balcony of a three-story house in Kabul when they hell-fired him Sunday. And so the Taliban neither confirmed that that was him or said he was dead. Taliban said to the leadership of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has instructed the intelligence agencies to hold a comprehensive and serious investigation. The fact that America invaded our territory and violated all international principles, we strongly condemn that action once again. If such action is repeated, the responsibility of any consequences will be on the United States of America. Oh, Well, at least they're fresh out of statues to bomb. Taliban. Making life a living hell for women again. But that, yeah, they didn't know he was there. Sure. And a little piece of information, speaking of brutal dictatorships, a little piece of information coming out of Florida. Ron Monkey Up DeSantis did some announcing earlier today. And this is actually a surprising amount of power even for a governor. Story came out of the Tampa Bay Times. This just blows my mind. The governor of the state of Florida has the power to suspend an elected state attorney. Now, of course, the elected state attorney is a Democrat. The elected state attorney who's a Democrat is Andrew Warren of Hillsborough County. People went to the polls and voted for Andrew Warren, and Ron Monkey Up DeSantis apparently has the power to overturn the will of the voters of Hillsborough County. That just beats all. I mean, I was actually surprised. He went to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office and said, "We're suspending Soros-backed 13th Circuit State Attorney Andrew Warren." And when you say Soros-backed, what Ron Monkey Up DeSantis is saying is Jew-backed, because Soros is, I mean, it's the biggest right-wing anti-Semitic dog whistle there is that people are largely unaware of. "We're suspending Soros-backed 13th State Circuit State Attorney Andrew Warren for neglecting his duties as he pledges not to uphold the laws of the state. Constitution of Florida. It's in the Constitution. Has vested the veto power in the governor, not in state attorneys. We are not going to allow..." We, him and that mouse in his pocket. "We are not going to allow this pathogen of ignoring the law to get a foothold in the state of Florida." Now, bear in mind, Mr. Warren, Andrew Warren, isn't just some wet-behind-the-ears kid fresh out of law school. Among other things, he's a former federal prosecutor. And he was listed as number 15 on Tampa Bay's most powerful politicians. And then, we've heard of her before, there's Christina Peshaw. Oh, Peshaw. She said, "Prepare for the liberal media meltdown of the year. Ron DeSantis, Governor DeSantis is going to deliver a major announcement Thursday morning." And you get the idea. She's she's in the mold of, say, a Kellyanne Conjob. Christina Peshaw is. "Progressive prosecutors backed by Soros have refused to enforce laws across the country. They treat criminals with deference and victims with contempt. This dereliction of duty is why crime is surging. But Ron DeSantis won't stand for this. He just suspended the one in Florida." Now, okay, why? Well, Andrew Warren signed a letter along with other prosecutors saying that he, in Hillsborough County, Florida, would not prosecute any crime relating to an abortion or any alleged crime relating to allegations of sex changes for trans kids. In other words, the man has morals. The man has ethics. where Ron Monkey Up Duclantis is found wanting. And so that's it. That's our Thorn in the Side Thursday, Friday on the Front Porch, on the way tomorrow. I'll be filling in for Malloy tomorrow evening. Hope you can join me for both. If we could bring in $92, we would meet Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Because there's a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco. And it's bad, y'all. And I hope maybe somebody hearing the podcast will hear it and respond. And thanks to everybody who does respond. And there's a lot of people who can't respond, who literally can't respond. And I understand that. And like John Britovo and I agree, don't ever hurt yourself helping to keep this going. Please don't. But, well, this isn't the $800,000 a day of Alex Jones. It just isn't. So thanks. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you. To our a la carte contributors, thank you so much this evening. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks so much to Skeeve from Georgistan, all-around great guy. And thanks to Sparky earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Best place to listen to the first round of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now a proud union shop. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. The challenge is met. Thank you. And by the challenge, I mean, thank you, Kat. That means Bruce and Karen's challenge is met, and Matt's challenge is met. Thank you. So that means tomorrow's fundraising goal will only be $600. That's so, so huge. And we got a fighting chance. And that's all we've ever wanted, was just a puncher's chance. Thank you. Please stay safe. Get your second booster. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet. Like Paul from Parts Unknown suggests, wear your mask in busy places where the unvaccinated may wander free. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. And, of course, if you run into somebody with a thick Eastern European accent hollering about rice mixing, avoid that person like the plague, that Nazi like the plague, because he is. And thank you, Christopher. Oh, Christopher, thank you so much. So we're $590 tomorrow. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.